hopefully your Friday is going great. If it's not, go outside if it's not too hot out. Go play with your dog or your pet or your kid. Take a break from the day, relax, go read, do something that you enjoy to make your Friday better, even if it's listening to this podcast. We put out great episodes, you know, whether or not we're always on time with them, but we will be more and more again, because I'm going to be pre-recording them, but anyhow, just make your Friday better and shorter. If you haven't been notified about any recent episodes or any episodes, all since you've followed us, well, one, make sure you do follow us if you haven't, because that is a really great way not to get notifications, but two, a place like Spotify will pop up a box after you follow us asking if you want to get notifications from a podcast. And if you want those notifications, all you have to do is tap little sidebar, and the sidebar will go left and the thing will turn green. And you will receive more notifications from us. I don't know about how other places do, but that's how Spotify does it. But in short, just make sure you follow us and that you are enabling notifications for our podcast. This episode is going to have a viewer's discretion advised for the simple fact that we're going to be talking about substance and drug abuse, neglect, even sexual assault, and on top of that, murder. So just beware. You don't want to hear any of that. That's fine. Just be warned. We are going to also discuss something that we haven't really talked about on this podcast, you know, partially because there's not a lot of information about a lot of people that we have talked about their past, and it goes into the debate of this whole serial killer mind thing, is nature versus nurture. You know, is the serial killer raised in an environment that forms them and their mindset to kill? Or are they, you know, have the other factor of more of a, is it already predetermined, I should say. So that's something to keep in mind with, I guess, every serial killer that we talk about, but specifically this one, because we are going to be going into the past a little bit, just a glimpse of it. We hear from his mother, we hear from his attorneys, kind of a see a side of his story, very, very small of it, but still there. Anyhow, let's go to a little bit about his early life, and like I said, keep in mind, is it nature or nurture? Metheny's attorney said that he had been neglected as a child and that his father was an alcoholic, was killed in a car accident when Joe was 6. And by the way, if I have not said the serial killer's name, we are going to be talking about Joe Metheny, a former citizen from Baltimore, Maryland. And that his mother also had neglected her 6 children while she worked double shifts outside the home. Metheny had said that his parents often sent him to live with other families in foster-like arrangements. Metheny had falsely claimed before, that his mother had died. His mother, I think, is still alive to this day. I don't really know, but at the time of the claim, he had said that she had died. His mother said that they were somewhat poor, though, and she had to work hard as a waitress, barmaid, and a food truck driver. But she had provided her children with a normal family life, and that the children had never gone hungry or been put in homes of other families, as Joe had claimed. She said that her son was an above-average student, always polite, and not mean as a child. She said that he was smart and had a good childhood. If he was ever neglected, it was his own fault, and it was a pretty good home. At the age of 18 in 1973, Joe had joined the United States Army, and his mother said that he had served in Germany, although Joe had claimed that he had served a tour in Vietnam, but with the time frame of that era, Vietnam and the American involvement had ended by that time. But whether or not he seemed to had started a heroin addiction problem in the army. According to his mother, Harris' son just kept on drifting farther and farther away, and she thinks that the worst thing that ever happened to him was drugs. That's a very small glimpse of his life. Like I said, it seems more of it was his own problem in his life. Yes, there was some things like his father being an alcoholic, abusive, you know, and his mother wasn't always there for him, you know, because she had to provide for her family. And I wouldn't necessarily say that's neglect, but if you're not feeding your child and making sure that they have the proper needs and stuff, it is neglect. And with the homes, you know, into other families' homes, you gotta think about it. Maybe the children at the time were too young. You know, she had 6 children. You know, maybe it was just more of a babysitting thing. I'm not sticking up for her mother or his mother, but maybe it was more of a babysitting thing. Imagine working 3 jobs, providing for 6 people by yourself, and you really have nobody to watch them. Now let's go way into the future when he confessed to some murders and he's done some murders and all of that. In 1994, Metheny had murdered Kathy Ann Magaziner. I'm pretty sure I said that name wrong, but that doesn't matter. She was a prostitute and even been convicted for prostitution. He had buried her body in a shallow grave on the site of the factory where he had worked. The body remained there for more than 2 years, though he later said that he had strangled her and he dug up her skeleton 6 months later, put her head in a box, and threw it in a trash. I don't know if it was during this time or if it was a different time, you know, but it seems like the drug abuse also tied into the murders. He was homeless, even spending time in bars, living with bands of homeless men, and he spent all his money on crack cocaine, heroin, and liquor. However, he had held his job as a forklifter and was universally described as intelligent, well-spoken, and very well-mannered. Metheny was tried as well for murder in a different case in 1995 for allegedly killing Randall Brewer and Randy Piker with the axe at a homeless tent Cinti campsite under Baltimore's Hanover Street Bridge. There had been disputes involving rival groups, of homeless men, and Larry Amos stole the murder weapon and used it to kill Everett Dowell, another homeless man. The bodies were discovered on August 2nd, 1995, the same day that Dowell had killed. Amos was arrested and accused of first-degree murder, and he had pleaded guilty to the lesser charge of manslaughter. He was released after serving 1 year and 9 months of an 8-year sentence. The jury concluded in July 1996 that there was insufficient evidence to convict Joe of murdering Brewer and Piker, but he later said that he was guilty of those murders as well. In mid-November of 1996, Metheny had killed Kimberly Lynn Spicer with a knife. He had stabbed her and he then kidnapped Rita Kemper on December 8th of 1996 and attempted to rape her. According to prosecutors, he shared drugs with her in the trailer where he was living at the pallet factory site. She refused to have sex with him and ran out of the trailer, so he chased her, beat her, dragged her back into the trailer, then pulled down her pants and attempted to rape her. Kemper said that he had attempted to murder her, saying, "I'm going to kill you and bury you in the woods with the other girls." She escaped through a window of the trailer and fled to a police or to police officers in the area. So let's, before we continue with the other stuff that he's done, it seems like he has, I'm not a psychologist, but it seems like a lot of this stems from his own anger and his own response to being told no. We see this a lot in these types of people. You know, whether it's sex offenders, rapists, serial killers, that when they're told no, whether or not he was already high, whether or not they would be already intoxicated, you know, we see this in those type of people that fail to handle the anger, and as a result, stuff like this happens. Like I said, I'm not a psychologist though, but that is what I am getting from most of his murders. Like I said, it didn't go much into what happened with him at Tent City besides, you know, being brought into the court for two people and, you know, not guilty about it because of insufficient evidence. But at the same time, you know, we can go into Kimberly. He has sexual desire problem. He can't handle his sexual urges. You know, people that cannot handle their sexual urges are people that typically, you know, have poor anger management problems. They have poor impulse control. Whenever they want something, they have to get it. And if they can't get it, it makes them more angry or more ambitious to get it. Drugs, it seems, also to have played a huge part into this. A huge, huge part into this. I don't know how many times I got to elaborate. Drugs, whether or not it affects a serial killer's mindset of becoming a serial killer, and I know that probably did not make any sense, but what I'm saying is, you know, it seems like a lot of these, when he did these, it may have actually evolved around drug usage. Like I said, whether or not he was high, I can't tell you that. Whether or not he was intoxicated, I can't tell you that. You know, I can't find that information. But what I can tell you from what I've read and what I've seen is, it seems like, you know, just from that one incident with Rita, drugs could have played a huge problem with other stuff. Metheny then asked a friend to help him bury the body of Spicer. Okay, if you don't remember Spicer, once again, he stabbed her with a knife in mid-November, which she had been hiding at the factory site since killing her a month earlier. The friend reported it to the police on December 15th of 1996, and Metheny was arrested and charged with her murder the same day. The owner of the business was arrested with Metheny as they left a Christmas party and was charged as an accessory for the fact, or after the fact, for allegedly disposing of evidence. Metheny began confessing to other murders, as well as that of Spicer. He then led police to the shallow grave where he had reburied Magnizer's decapitated remains. Much of the skull was missing, but the police were able to identify her from dental records. Now, the police, when they make a profile about a person, you know, they either have this person in the system, so they have a pretty good idea, or they don't in this case. It was kind of a mixture, but the police have claimed that in his profile, he targeted young white sex workers who were addicted to heroin and cocaine. The killings that he had done was brutal sexual assaults. It wasn't just, you know, I don't know what would define a normal, non-brutal sexual assault, because, you know, they can become violent all the way around, but I guess it's a point of what happens before, like in the case of Rita, when she said no, he chased her, beat her, dragged her back to the trailer, and then attempted to rape her. So I guess that would define a brutal sexual assault in this case, but he seems to have a history, as we've read, of these type of sexual assaults. He was indicted for killing Tony Lynn Agresia, who was 28 at the time, but those charges were later dropped due to lack of evidence. He claimed to have also killed three other prostitutes along Washington Boulevard in Baltimore. Although there was no evidence of those crimes other than his confession. He had said that he had thrown the bodies in a river, but they have never been found. In 1997, the Baltimore Sun newspaper reported that it was not clear how truthful his claims were about how many people he had killed. And that's, I'm going to be honest, that's typically the case. You know, serial killers kill a lot of people. Some serial killers kill very few. Some serial killers will bluntly admit they killed more people than anyone has ever known. It's probably possible, though, we can at least nudge to the idea without entirely accusing him of doing more. Say he probably did more than he know what was being reported. But he said that he has killed up to 10 people as well. His attorney said that he was remorseful, and the drugs and alcohol had changed him and his personality and made him violent. And like you said, drugs and alcohol can do that. If you've ever been through life with alcoholic, or you struggle with alcoholism, and, you know, or even drug abuse, it turns and changes a person inside out. He was found dead on August 5th of 2017 at the age of 62 in his prison cell at the Western Correctional Institution in Cumberland. When he was sentenced, he was tried in 1997 in the Kemper case and given a sentence of 50 years for kidnapping and attempted sexual assault. He was acquitted of attempting to murder her. He was sentenced to death in 1998 for the murder of Spicer. At his sentence hearing, he said that he committed murders because, quote unquote, he enjoyed it. He got a rush out of it, got a high out of it, and really had no real excuse why other than he liked to do it. We rarely see his murders, you know. Obviously, you can see murders all across the news, how it was just impulse or a drug deal gone wrong. But with a serial killer, a lot of serial killers have an intentional motive. Like I said, it's nature versus nurture. You know, some male serial killers will murder women and rape women because they despise their mother. So and the mother typically would not treat them well as a child, or they had an ideological view from the father on how women should be treated. Or if it's a female serial killer, we can say, you know, maybe in a case of a hospital worker, she hated children, or she can produce children, or, you know, all these other motives that we see with serial killers. Very rare, though, that a serial killer does not have an actual motive. In August 1998, he had pleaded guilty to murdering and robbing Magnizer, and prosecutors sought the death penalty in that case as well. He received a life sentence in prison in that case. His death sentence was overturned in 2000, and the sentence for the murder of Spicer was reduced to life without parole. The rationale for the death penalty was the murder had been committed and committing a robbery, but the evidence indicated that robbery was not his motivation. I don't really have much more to say about this guy, nor the case. I don't know much about the case, but, you know, he's also known as the Cannibal, though. You may have seen pictures of him online. It seems like this guy is a pretty scary guy, and I'm not saying all serial killers are not, but it seems like from what he has done, he just did what he did. He's also dubbed on YouTube as the Human Hamburger Killer. And in that such thing, I think he made hamburgers out of human meat. I don't know if I can find more about that, though. Let's see really fast. Let me research this. Well, without further ado, though, you know, it's whatever. But yeah. See you next time on our podcast. And I'll let you know if we are delayed or going to be delayed or not. See you next time on the After Dark Coast to Coast Long Haul Killers podcast series.